Shavua Tov, world. Today's daf in Masechet Nedarim, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Pechet. And even though we did the Mishnah on Pezayin Amud Beit, I'm going to just review it briefly so that we can get right back into it. So here the question is, a person who says, I know that there are Nedarim, and I know that my wife made a Neder, but I had no idea that a husband is allowed to be made for a neder. So then, when he finds out about it, he can be made for. Why? Because it's not considered to be your biyom shamo when he had no real yediyah that came out of his shmia. Shmia means to understand, not simply to hear the sonic waves. And since over here he has no sense whatever that the fact that he is the husband of a woman who made a neder is relevant, when he does find out that it's relevant, then he does the afara. But how about in a case where he says, I do know that a husband does have rights over certain nedarim, yodea nishiyesh mefirim, but I had no idea that this is the type of neder that you're allowed to. I know that there's all kinds of different dinim about beno veina and nidra yinui nefesh, but I didn't realize that this was one of those nedarim that I am empowered to do the hafaran. So Rabbi Meir omer lo yafer, Chachamim omrim yafer. Now, the best way for understanding the Gemara, the simplest way for understanding our Gemara that follows is to understand the Mishnah as I'm about to explain it. But I must warn you that there are other explanations of the Mishnah, and that we actually had referenced this Mishnah earlier. And over there, everybody was saying a different pshat, because that was because they weren't responsible to make it fit with the Gemara that follows. The Gemara that follows, the simplest way, the most glatt way of understanding it, is as follows. When Rabbi Meir says, lo yafer, Rabbi Meir means he can never be mayfair the neder. Because the issue over here is that he does know about Nedarim and he knows about Hafara. So the fact that he did not know that this is a neder that he can be made for is irrelevant in the sense that he should go now and find out. But this is certainly Yom Shamo. And if he didn't bother going and finding out what it is that he should do, so it was a Yom Shamo that passed by without his being made for the neder. Now you'll say, well, what do you mean without his being made for the neder? He could simply have said, look, I don't know whether I have a right to be made for this neder, but in the event that I do have such a right, I want to make it very clear that I'm against that neder. See, the thing is that that's not going to help him, because vis-a-vis the Yom Shamo, this is certainly a Yom Shmi'ah that provides him with the possibility of a full yediyah to be made for. But if he doesn't have that yediyah, because he didn't bother to get it, he can't be mefer on the off chance that it is one of these types of nedarim, because the concept of the hafaras nedarim requires his clear da'at of the neder. Now, this is very related to what we said earlier about you need to know who made the neder, you need to know precisely what the neder was, and in this case, we're adding that according to Rabbi Meir, in order to be mefer a neder, you need to be able to relate to that neder as one of the nedarim that you, as father or as a husband, has a right to be made. So tain is Rabbi Meir. As I say, again, this is the way that we're going to learn the Mishnah, even though there are alternatives that are nowhere near as neat and that don't fit the Gemara that comes. The Chachamim, and the Chachamim that argue with Rabbi Meir is always Rabbi Yehuda. The Chachamim omrim, no, you can be made for it, meaning that since you knew that there were nedarim that could be mufarim, and you said, if this is one of those nedarim, I'm hereby made for it, that itself is a sufficient yediyah. You knew precisely what the neder was. You're misupak about whether you have the right to be, but you're taking the full responsibility of hafara. So even though it's only a partial yediyah, and you would say that a partial yediyah is not considered to be enough to really know the neder, Rabbi Yehuda holds that it is, and that therefore, if you were made for it on the day that you heard it, despite the fact that you weren't sure, that that is a proper hafara. Okay, so then what does that mean? If we're correct in the way that we just learned the Mishnah, what it's actually telling us is that there's a machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda as to whether a partial knowledge of a thing allows you to completely relate to that thing. And therefore, the question is translated as, is a miktsat yidiah the equivalent of a yidiah shlema? That's the question. So Rabbi Meir is saying, no, there's something that's innately different about a miktsat yidiah from yidiah. Because remember, yidiah being the concept of da'at, says Rabbi Meir, ipso facto means a full relationship. How can you call something da'at if you don't really know that you could actually utilize this supposed power that you have? It's a maybe. Maybe can't be da'at. Isn't maybe sort of the very issue that you would say is the nature of not having da'at? In other words, if someone doesn't have da'at, it's not that they don't know about the thing in English. They know about the thing, but there's no real connection to it because there's always a sense of, I'm not really connected and convinced that there's anything I can do with this. So then, according to Rabbi Meir, that's not called da'at. And since this entire issue seems to be fundamentally connected to the idea of making a neder or undoing a neder, it requires a complete da'at. Masha Enkein, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we consider this to be knowledge. It's partial, but in the sense of a suffix. But if you acted on the basis of that, it's sufficient to allow you to actually make a difference in the chalos of the neder. Now, we're assuming that this is a general machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. In other words, if you hold that miktsas yediyah kekol yediyah, then that means that you can always proceed on the basis of a partial knowledge of a thing. If, on the other hand, when the Torah expects you to know something, it means only to fully be aware of it, so then in any sugya where the Torah expects you to know, then that would be the case. If this is true, then we end up with a serious contradiction in the shitot both of Rabbi Meir and of Rabbi Yehuda. Because, here's our question, I'm sorry, I have a sore throat, so I just have a lozenge. If the Torah says, below ra'ot, so what is, we're talking about over here, someone who causes a manslaughter, right? So he kills somebody accidentally. So it says that if somebody is below ra'ot, yapel, so it, we're not quite sure what that means. He comes into this place, but he doesn't see. Vayapel alo vayomot, and he had thrown this even on this person, and the guy dies. Vulo oyevlo velo mevakesh ra'ato, he was had nothing to do with this guy. He didn't, it was not, I didn't hate him. He wasn't in any way interested in this guy being hurt. Now, it's saying that the below ra'ot is mashma that what? He didn't see. He could have seen, but he didn't see. So it seems to be saying. We have a machlokas. Below ra'ot means prat l'suma. So this means that somebody who is blind is not going to be chayev. Why? Well, that's because Rabbi Yehuda in general holds, this is Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda in general holds that you need a complete awareness of what's going on in order to be included in the chiyuv, right? So now, if someone is blind, so then he does not have a full yediyah. Why? Because even though he may be using his ears and any other senses that are reporting that there's a person here, he doesn't know precisely where that person is because he's unable to identify his location with seeing. And the other senses that he's using are not as accurate as seeing. So what does that mean? That Rabbi Yehuda is assuming that if the Torah is talking about below ra'ot, then what it means is that if he is blind, then he would not be included, because the mashma'ut is that this person could have seen, and he didn't look. Somebody who is bichlal, unable to see, and he did the best to identify whether anybody was there when he threw this rock. So in that case, he's not included, because this is not a person who has the capability of a total yidia. So it says Reb Yehuda. Now, this is the opposite of what Reb Yehuda said in the Mishnah. Reb Yehuda said in the Mishnah, you can be mefer even though you don't fully know. And that would mean that over here, you could be chayav in murdering someone by accident, even though you can't fully identify his location, but you get a pretty good idea of his location by using your ears, and that's sufficient. Rabbi Meir also reverses his shita, because Rabbi Meir says that this is coming l'rabot et ha-suma, and that actually this includes the suma. So it says he didn't see. Okay, the suma didn't see. What's the difference? He can't see. Which is mashma, according to Rabbi Meir, what you're saying is that even though he didn't have the ability to have a total yediya, but it's enough of a yediya that he could have had to be able to be aware of the fact that someone is there in the general area. And that should have sufficed to be mechayev him. Now, even though it seems to be learning it out of the pasuk, the only way to understand this is akasha, is that it's not that we're learning it out of a pasuk, it's that we are inserting our preconceived notion of what a yediya is, depending on whether you hold like Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah, which ought to be that the partial yediya is not a yediya, or if you hold like Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah, it ought to be a partial yediya is a completely usable yediya. And over here, they're saying exactly the opposite. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the Summa is not included because they can't have a full yediya. Why would we need a full yediya? And according to Rabbi Meir, you don't need a full yediya. But why wouldn't we need a full yediya? Since according to Rabbi Meir, a mixas yediya is not a yediya. So we have a contradiction. Omar Rava, you're making a mistake. We weren't inserting our preconceived notions into the pasuk. We were actually learning the din out of the pasuk. And therefore, if you take a look at the two sugyas, one of Nedarim and the other of the Retzach Bishoge, you will see that the nature of the words in the pasuk have opposite implications. That's the point. Because if you read the pasuk of the case of the Retzicha, so Rabbi Yehuda says, look, it says in general, in the introduction of one of the parshias in Shofti about the Knisa into the Ir HaMiklat, it starts off with saying, Asher yavo et re'ehu biyar, if somebody goes into a forest and he's chopping wood and the hatchet, whatever, however we learn, some machlokas, the hatchet detaches, a piece of wood goes, kills somebody. Now, what's the point of saying, Asher yavo et re'ehu biyar? That's to tell me that as long as the individual is someone who is capable of walking into a forest and being the agency of this person's death, okay, that means kol debar me'el yelyar, anybody that is some, therefore, capable of going into the forest. Is a suma not a bar me'el yelyar? He's also. Now, that would mean that the Torah has already included the suma. Now, if you're going to tell me that the other parsha that says Belo Ra'ot in Bamidbar over there also means, Belo Ra'ot means that even if he's blind, he would be included. I know that already. Miyar Nafkalei. Therefore, we have to understand that the Belo Ra'ot is Dafka coming to limit the din and to teach us, don't learn that the Ya'ar is coming to include the Suma. But Adarabba, that Belo Ra'ot is excluding the Suma. Whereas the way that Rabbi Meir learns the entire pasuk is that he says it specifies over there Bivli Da'at. So it's only somebody who kills without awareness, which means anybody that could have been fully aware of that person and nonetheless ended up killing him and didn't take the precautions of noting that he was there. But a suma is not a bar meidahu, because he could never completely identify where this person is, because he doesn't have re'iyah. He can only give a more general sense of where the person is. So according to that, I would have said that a suma is not included. And if you're going to tell me that below ra'ot means he doesn't see now, but could see normally, and that excludes a suma, well, I know that already from b'lidat, because the idea of b'lidat is that he doesn't have a complete yediyah, and he can't have one. Elishmamina, therefore, below ra'ot is in fact l'rabot et ha'suma. Masha'en kein, in the story of the psukim of the neder, over there we don't have any kind of specific mention. It just says, v'shama avya es nidra, or v'shama isha. And it doesn't say how much it is that you have to be able to respond. It just says ishmiya without further qualifications, right? So therefore, according to Rabbi Meir, the idea of vishama means vishama, where you are completely aware of what you can do. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, it just doesn't mean that, because it doesn't specify it. You heard about it, that's also enough. Fine. In any event, it turns out that this is not a generalized machlokas. This is a machlokas in which we have to apply each case as it comes from the context of the pasukim. Now, that's one approach. There's also a completely different approach to the Gemara elsewhere, that over here we're learning it from a miut achar miut, ein miut achar miut, ela l'rabot. And therefore, according to this, as the Gemara Marcus learns, that when you say below ra'ot, and you're also, that he's below da'at, that's a miut achar miut. A miut achar miut is marbe, the case of the sum'ah. Now this brings us to our favorite kapitan. Actually, before continuing, I just wanted to mention that we have actually a yard site tonight of Rabbi Yisrael. Those of you who remember how wonderful it was having Rabbi Yisrael with us, it might have been even two times ago, when we were learning in that small Beis HaMedrash next to my home in the Rova, and his yard site is today, meaning tonight and tomorrow, so it would be beautiful to learn today's learning, L'Aliyas Nishmas Yisrael Yanai Simcha Ben Rafael. That's Reb Yisrael. Now, today was also my mother's yard site, but it's already past the day, and we can have an opportunity to learn the day, but I would like to learn the daf at least, which is Shabbos's daf for Aliyas Nishmata, and that is Aliyas Nishmas Shena Chana Bas Rabbi Yaakov Yitzchak Halevi. Okay, so now continuing on from this Mishnah. So the new Mishnah takes us to Hamadir. Be nice to be able to see you. You guys have disappeared. One second. Got you back. Hamadira na'a, I should say lichatano is a better, perhaps, girsa. The idea over here is that somebody does not want his rotten son-in-law to ever have any hana'a from him. But he does want to give his beloved daughter some cash. And he wants to keep that cash out of the hands of his rotten son-in-law. So what can he do? Because it's a big problem. And the problem is that when a woman gets cash, it automatically, remember, is supposed to belong to the husband as long as he's able to eat the payrus. He's asked to invest the cash and keep it for her. And then, after he dies or gets divorced, she takes whatever is there. But at least in the interim, he was being nene from the payrot. So he bought a shopping center and he gets the income, whatever it is. And he doesn't want that to happen, this father-in-law. He wants the cash to go entirely to his daughter. He wants to give his daughter-in-law money. So now the Ran understands, the whole point over here is that if he would be giving her food, there would be no problem. Because as we saw earlier, if somebody is actually mazing, he's mefarnes a person's wife, then that Baal has absolutely nothing in this, as if, because he's taking the place of the Baal. And therefore, just as if the Baal gives her something and she leaves over and she has extra, he doesn't get anything in that. It's entirely hers. The same thing would be true here. But the father doesn't want to give her food. He wants to give her cash. And so, therefore, he says to her, I'm giving this money to you as a gift, but only on condition, but only on condition that your husband doesn't have any rights to this money. But you have to take this money. You have to take this money and you use it to put something good in your mouth. Now, this is interesting because apparently just saying one of these things would not have been sufficient. In other words, just to make it tonight, I'm giving this to you on condition that your husband doesn't get any of it. That's not going to help. He has to furthermore say that you can only get it yourself when you're putting something in your mouth. So in other words, that, the Ran explains, by saying that that makes it the equivalent of something that the husband won't have rishus over, because food, when somebody's being farneser, never is in any way able to go to a Baal. And therefore, the Mishnah is teaching us that just saying, I'm making it tonight, that your husband can't buy anything with it to be netted from the peres, which would, of course, mean that I'm being over on my netter by giving it to him, because I made a netter, he's not allowed to be netted from me. That wouldn't have been enough. Oh, my Rav. So Rav says, look, when it says over here, Masha at nosit v'notenet bepich, it means precisely that. It's Masha at nosit v'notenet bepich. But suppose he's just said to her, I'm giving you cash to be used as you like it. And that's the point. So then it wouldn't help. And then, kanaya to nabal, then the Baal, in fact, would have been able to nene from it anyway, because the whole point over here is that the Baal is giving actually the same as if the Baal gave food. He wouldn't be able to get anything out of it even if she leaves it over. So too, if somebody else is doing that, it has to also say it's dafka food. Now, this is how Ron understands it. And it isn't the point that it's anything. It's any other thing. So that we're specifically referring to the issue of food. But if he gives her the rights over the money, and he says, you can use it for anything, then that for sure, according to all of the Rishonim, that for sure would mean that you've given her a normal matana. But a normal matana goes to the husband to be used for the peres, even though the matana totally belongs to her. The peres of the matana don't belong to her. And since the peres of the matana are given to the Baal, it would mean that the father-in-law, who does not want that Baal to be netted from him, is, in fact, being mahana the Baal. So that's not going to help him in light of the netter that he made to avoid precisely that. And therefore, what we need is a specification, according to the Ran, legabe food, or, according to other Rishonim, a specification, but not a generalized gift to do what you want with it. So, says Rav. Shmuel says, no, he could even say, do whatever the heck you want. The husband is not kene. Now, again, the way that the Ran understands the whole sugya, yeah, is that, of course, Shmuel recognizes that what was said in the Mishnah is clearly what Rav is explaining. And Rav is, I'm not going to argue on the Mishnah. I mean, if it would be true that you could say anything, Masha Tirtzi Asi, so then why in the world would the Mishnah specify a case of food of all things, or not specify something at all, but just to say Masha Tikni, Masha Tirtzi Tikni? Of course I agree with that. However, what Shmuel is essentially saying is that I disagree with you in terms of the halacha. I don't disagree with you in terms of how you understand the Mishnah. Because what's happening over here is that the Mishnah is based on Rebbe Meir's Shita. Rebbe Meir's Shita is that when somebody is actually acting as a yad to someone else, and the woman is considered to be the yad of her husband, vis-a-vis the kinyan of this item, legabe the peres. Therefore, since that is Rabbi Meir Shita, it's not going to help to say to her that as long as your husband does not have rishus to it, because the only way she can be kenes something is through her husband, because she is acting as the yad of her husband. Therefore, there's a big problem over here. And the only way that he could possibly see to it that it would not go through the husband is by specifying that it would be nogia food. Again, this is the way the Ran understands it. The other Rishonim understand it by specifying something or another. But it would need to be specific so that she only gets it for that purpose, and therefore it cannot go towards the husband's purchase of something out of which he's going to be able to get a pay raise. Whereas Shmuel says, well, the fact that Rav said this over in terms of the halacha seems to mean that he actually paskins like Rabbi Meir. I agree that the Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, but I don't agree that the halacha is like Rabbi Meir. I hold that the halacha is like the Rabbanan, and that is that if you make a simple tonight that b'tnai that your husband does not have rishus in it, so then why wouldn't that work? Since in the case where you're acting not as a yad for someone else, but someone else is able to get what it is that you acquire. So if you're setting up a situation where you have set up a resonating catch-22, if you're koneit and your husband has rishus, then you're not koneit. But if you're not koneit, then you are koneit, because then your husband doesn't have rishus, and so on, right? So basically, this is one of these Escher kind of issues. And in doing that, what we do is we allow the catch-22 to prevent that part of it, which would have made it an impossibility, and the buck stops here. She gets it, and the husband doesn't get it. Therefore, according to Shmuel, there's no reason for Rav to present this as the halacha, even though it's true, in terms of the Mishnah. So therefore, Taina Shmuel, as far as the halacha is concerned, afilu amar ma shetirtzi asi lo kanayaton baal, which means, according to the Ran, that you don't need to even say that. Because according to Shmuel, all you need to do is say the tonight. Now, this is a big machlokas. If Shmuel is essentially saying this, Shalo Alibed Ravi Meir, so the question is, why would you need to say anything at all? According to the Ran, indeed, you don't need to say anything at all. You could actually say either of these things. You could say, do what you want with the money, and it's on that tonight that I'm giving it to you. Or you could say, on condition that your husband doesn't have any right to it, and that would also be completely enough in order to limit its passing on to anyone else. Now, here there would be a big machlokas, because if this is a general question, then its main issue is monetary. And the monetary elements of it mean that we would paskin like Shmuel. If this is an issue that has to do with understanding the nature of the neder, then it has to do with Isser. And if it has to do with Isser, then we would paskin like Rav, because the halacha is like Rav in all of his machlokas and with Shmuel Agabi Isser. So the way in which we learn the sugya ends up making a major difference in terms of who we paskin like. And those of you who wish to know the Rambam's psak would be well advised to become members of the Moshe Forman card game, which will enable you to learn all about the Rambam's psak, which is also discussed here by the Ran directly. Matke for Rabbi Zeir. So Rabbi Zeir says that doesn't make any sense. How could Rav say this? If you're saying that over here the whole thing is working out only according to Rabbi Meir, right? Who holds? Kamana also al Shmaitzer de Rav. only like Rabbi Meir de Omer Yad Isha Ki Yad Ba'ala. You're saying that the very way that the woman is able to actually get a kinyan is something is through her husband. And therefore, it makes no sense to say, Amanat Shein L'Ba'alech Reshutba, because the way in which you're giving her the kinyan is giving it through the Baal. And therefore, you're saying that it's not going to be enough to say, U'bilvatcha in the Ba'alech Reshutba. The problem is that if this is true, then we've got an issue with Rav contradicting himself. Because for Aminu, Ketzad Mishtatfim B'Mavui, we have a Mishnah over here that is a Stam Mishnah, and it's Alibid Rebbe Meir. And so remember that in order to be Mishatef various Chatzerot in a Mavui, it's something like an Eruv Chatzerot. You remember we learned all of these dinim in Mesechet Eruvin. So if you have different homes in a joint Chatzer, they need, in order to be able to carry between them, they need to make it all symbolically one Rishus, and they all participate in what's known as an Eruv for the Chatzeras. There's also a Mavui, which sometimes is the way that the various Chatzeros get to Rishus HaRabim. So if a Chatzer doesn't open directly into Rishus HaRabim, and instead it opens into an alleyway which other Chatzeros open into, then besides the Eruv in the Chatzer, there would also be a problem of their being able to carry in the Mavui from the Chatzer. In order to get around that, all of the various chatzeros that open up into this mavui need to participate in what's known as a shituf mevo'ot, which is a different type of eruv and is accomplished by putting food in one of the chatzeros. So there's a lot of different dinner, which you'll recall from eruvin between the eruv and the mavui. But in any event, if you want to be mezakeh other people in the mavui, you don't really need to get everybody to participate in this. What you can do is you set up a barrel where you've got like enough wine in this barrel to be sufficient for the mavui. I mean, it doesn't have to be wine, but that was the standard case. And you want to transfer to give a zechus to all of the people that are in the mavui. So you put the chaviz down. And you say, this wine is sufficient for everyone here to participate in, and you all have a zechus in it. But how do they get a zechus in it? Obviously, you need to do a kinyan. Somebody needs to do a kinyan. So who does the kinyan? You give your mezakelahem. So you give it through either your eved or your shivcha, who's not an eved knani, or Shifcha Kananis, because an Eved is just an extension of your own rights of Kinyan and does not have a Yad of his own. But if it's an Eved Ivri or an Amma Ivriya, there's no problem. You can do it through that. Or if you have children that are already Gidolim, you can give it to them. Ayade Beno, Ubito, HaGidolim. So all he needs to do is basically pick it up for somebody else. And since they have their own Yad, so therefore, it can't be a Katan, and it can't be a Kanani, but it could certainly be a Gadol, and it could be an Eved Ivri. Now, here's the click here. Ve'al yedei ishto. You can also transfer it through your wife. Uh-oh. Because what Rav just said is that you can never transfer anything to your wife, because he was saying that I understand Rabbi Meir is basically holding that the moment that the wife has something, it's only hers by virtue of her being the yad of the Baal. But if that's true, then the Erev, or the Mav, for the Mavui, never left the Rishus of the Baal. So in what sense did he transfer it? A transfer means of giving it to somebody else to benefit others. But I'm not giving it to somebody else, because this woman is an extension of my own yad. Therefore, Erev, lo nafik Rishus of the Baal. And in which sense could possibly we have paskened that according to Rabbi Meir, it would be a kosher mavui, Erev for the mavui? Oh, my Rava, that's not a problem. Because even though Rabbi Meir, according to the way Rav understands it, he's saying that the yad of the Isha is ki yad ba'ala, but in a case where the Baal wants it not to be his, he wants it to be dafka hers in order that he could transfer it, he's made that kima de la zakot la kerimu, then certainly she does get it from her husband, miyad ba'la zachya. So that the Baal could certainly give her the rights to a thing if he's giving it himself, so he's giving up any of his zechuyos to it. And therefore, in that case, then the Eruv is basically given to her as a matona in order to be mezaka others. So what's the problem? And she was zocha, says the Gemara, but that's not true. Eisvei Ravina Larvashi, hold on a second. It says beferish, if they were talking about the same sugya, we're talking about giving food for a shituf in a movi. Elu shezachin lehem, says the Braita. Here are the people that you can give over the rights to the shituf mavos. You could give it over through beno, bito, hagedolim. You could give it over through your eved or your shivcha havriim. Doesn't say anything about your wife. On the contrary. Elu she'ein zachin lehem. And the following are the people that you cannot use to transfer it to someone else as a schus for the mavli. Al yedei benobi to aktanim. So far, that's fine. That's exactly what we just learned. Al yedei avdov shivcha to aktanim. That's fine. But the next word is very much not fine. V'ishto. You cannot use your wife. For heaven's sakes, I thought that you just said that since basically you are giving it to her in order to be mizaka, that itself means that you, the Baal, are saying that you don't want her hand to be yours and that she is being zocha first herself, and therefore she can be zocha for others. But if she's being zocha for herself, then how do you explain this brisa? She's obviously not being zocha for herself, for if she were, she would have transferred it automatically to the other people. So therefore, the way we understood the answer was clearly wrong. There's a piece missing. Elo Amar Rav Ashi, you are correct. It's not simply enough that the Baal's intent is to transfer this through her to other people. There's an additional complication. Our Mishnah about Shituf Mavos was talking about using your wife who owns a Yerusha in that mavoi. So she's got her own chotzer that she inherited. So therefore, she's got a big problem. She has to be zeicha herself because she has to be able to carry from her chotzer into the mavoi. And that's completely hers. How is it completely hers? It came hers before you actually took her to the chuppah. And this was done specifically. We had this whole sugya back in service. It was done specifically where the husband said that he's not going to get any pay raise from this particular property. And then when he takes her, then in the chuppah, he doesn't get the rights to the pay raise. Fine. So that's what it's talking about. So therefore, the case is that she herself needs to have an eruv, meaning she needs to have herself a shutfas in the mavli. If that's the case, then that means that if she herself is an owner, then that means that the Baal is giving her a present. He's telling her, I want you to be able to carry also. So here, this is for you. Once it's for her, obviously the husband can give her a gift, that's for sure. So once she's able to be zeichet as a gift for herself, so memela, she can also give it for others. Demigo de zachya l'nafsha, since she was zeichet in this kinyan, in which he says, Bikaina for yourself, for your own chotzer in this mavli, and for anybody else who has a chotzer in this mavli, since she's clearly going to be kaina for herself, therefore she can be kaina also for others. Zake lach rine. And so everything makes perfectly good sense. There's no stira whatsoever. We don't have to have any kind of change in the way we understood Rabbi Meir. Okay, so that this basically opens up not something that's directly nogea so much to the dinim of Nedarim, but is very much nogea the interrelationships of Yadayim and Kinyanim, which could easily make a big difference in Nedarim, and this becomes now a mocker to the understanding of a sugya that shows up a great deal in Bava Basra and other places, where the same sugya is important for other reasons, obviously.